For Martin Luther King, and with us on the Team Hochberg phone line, Pulitzer Prize winning author of America in the King Years, the Pulitzer Prize winning author, three volumes, it's the definitive history of the civil rights movement, Taylor Branch. Good morning, Taylor. Good to be talking to you. I had a chance to interview you years ago on Channel 5, and it's great to have you on with us this morning.
Thanks, Bob. I'm glad to be back with you and Chicago.
Let's talk a little bit about Chicago and Dr. King. You were here for the convention in 68, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I was 21.
That had to be a memorable experience.
Yes, it was. I'm from Atlanta. I'm from Georgia. Grew up in Dr. King's hometown. And I was part of a challenge movement to challenge Lester Maddox, the segregationist governor of Georgia at that time, appointed the entire Georgia delegation. It was not Democratic. It was basically all white men who favored the Vietnam War. And so a wide coalition of Georgians challenged it. In a delegation that was led by Julian Bond, who became my lifelong friend. And I came to Chicago basically to iron his shirts and be like an assistant into the maelstrom of that convention. So, yes, it's an unforgettable memory for me back before I even finished college. Well, actually, I had just finished college, but I hadn't started my career yet.
You've written that Dr. King was like a conventional politician in some ways. How so?
Well, he managed relations. He saw that the civil rights movement could be exciting, but it would be a fad unless it consolidated some landmarks in law. And so in Selma and the March on Washington, he negotiated with politicians and indeed with all three branches of government during Selma, local governments. He was negotiating with the Justice Department, with President Johnson, who urged him to obey federal orders and that sort of thing. So he realized that the movement needed to establish footholds in history, civil rights legislation. It was important. He was invited before the March on Washington, he was invited to the White House by President Kennedy for the first time. And as eager as he was, he said, "I'll be there tomorrow." Then he found out he was going to be one of 300 people seated in the East Room. And he wrote back and said, "I'm sorry, I've overlooked an important engagement. I can't make it." He was jousting. So, yes, he maneuvered politically. He didn't just give speeches and lead people in marches. He also recognized that the movement was needed to grow into politics.
He came to Chicago in 1965 at the invitation of the Chicago Freedom Movement, which was a coalition of 44 civil rights organizations. And for Dr. King, I don't know what he expected, but it certainly was a rude awakening for him, wasn't it?
No, it was not a rude awakening. He had been going to Chicago most of his life. He knew what race relations were like in Chicago, and indeed through the North. His first place that he went was Boston, where he had gone to graduate school to consider having a movement in the North. After Selma, he considered it his duty to have a movement in the North to show that the race problem wasn't then and never had been just a Southern problem. And most of his staff didn't want him to do it, but he said we need to advance the awareness in America that we can't pretend that it's just limited here and there. And he ultimately chose Chicago as a place to go to show that nonviolence could work in the North, and to show that there were race problems grounded in separate neighborhoods in the North. And that's what he did. Most of his staff said, don't do this, because we've got all the Northern press with us as long as we're down in Selma. But when we start trying to have marches against segregation in Northern cities, the press is going to turn against us, which by and large it did.
He moved into an apartment on the west side here in the 1500 block of South Hamlin, and there was some ugly scenes. He was hit in the head with a rock. He said that the only time I have been booed was one night in a Chicago mass meeting by some young members of the Black Power movement. I went home that night with an ugly feeling. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing because they felt we were unable to deliver on our promises. It was because Dr. King believed in the peaceful, nonviolent movement protest?
Yes, absolutely. And there were some amazing scenes, kind of lost to history, hard to recover, of him actually negotiating with gang leaders over trying out nonviolence, saying that nonviolence took more courage than shooting people on the street or gang violence. And a number of gang leaders from the separate gangs there in Chicago did march with him into Gage Park and Marquette Park and some of the neighborhoods in Chicago. And the marches were incredibly violent, and some of the gang leaders maintained discipline. There's no record of violence coming out of the marches against the white neighborhoods in that period. So it was short-lived, but it was pretty remarkable for what happened there.
What would Dr. King make of Black Lives Matter, and what would he make of what happened in our nation's capital January 6th?
Well, it's pretty sad. I think he would say the race problem has always been the key to how serious Americans are about democracy since the American Revolution and through the Civil Rights era, and certainly today. You can tell how seriously we study and practice democracy by looking at how people speak about race and interact across the barriers of race. And I think you'd also say that the key measure of that is whether there's violence or nonviolence. I mean, Dr. King was frustrated in his career that so many people thought nonviolence was exotic and strange for, you know, Gandhi and vegetarians or something.
Mm-hmm.
When to him, he said, if you believe in votes, you believe in nonviolence, because that's what votes are. You know, they're nonviolent. And he said, we are of a piece with the American revolutionaries who spent 6 years after the British surrendered in 1781 figuring out how to have a constitution in 1787 that made votes the measure of power. And he said, Americans forget how radical, how miraculous that is, that we made votes, a thin paper ballot, more powerful than bullets and swords.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the world, you know, that's not true in Afghanistan or China or many, many, most countries around the world. How you establish a voting system to lift your civilization and not have violence be dragging you down is really key. And of course, the violence in the Capitol two Wednesdays ago reminds us how fragile and precious the notion is that we can settle things by votes. And if it's lost, it's hard to reestablish. So in that sense, what I try to remind people is that Dr. King, in some senses, was doing exactly what the founders were doing, trying to move a society based on violence as the measure of power to one based on votes and self-government. And That's why I call Dr. King and the movement around him modern founders, trying to do the same thing that Madison and Jefferson and Washington were doing.
And the quote from Dr. King that's in your book is so timely today. The American people are infected with racism. That is the problem. The American people are also infected with democratic idealism. That is our hope. Did he die an optimist, Taylor?
All you have to do is listen to the tone of King's voice, even before the words. There's kind of an anguish mixed with hope. He knew how serious the race problem was. He was by no means, Pollyanna, but he was an optimist. He said, you know, we'll win our freedom because the goal of America is freedom. And it is true that if we really don't, if we really lose that grounding in nonviolence and constitutional interaction with one another, that is the American story. That's what makes us distinctive around the world.
Taylor Branch, Pulitzer Prize-winning author of America in the King Years, the definitive history of the civil rights movement. It's in three volumes, and it's one of those books you keep them on hand as reference books. Taylor, a great pleasure and honor to talk with you again.
Thank you very much, Bob, and best to Chicago.